Hey everyone, and welcome back to another round of Deep Dive with polling just a few days away. So we hope you've been enjoying our chats with some of the new faces from the different parties who are standing for elections. We end the series with the Workers' Party candidate for East Coast GRC, Mr. Jasper Kwan. Now, Jasper is 47. He's the father of three. He's the Asia Pacific product lead for dispute solutions at Visa Worldwide. And before his career pivot, he was a teacher at Catholic High School where he taught in the gifted education program. Well, Jasper, welcome to Deep Dive.
Thanks so much for having me here, Steve.
So I'm going to ask you the standard question we've been asking all our candidates. Describe yourself in three words.
Three words. First one, to come up, father.
Okay.
I'm a proud father of three. I love my kids. All three of them went through the same first 5 years, always sitting on my lap, me reading books to them.
Okay.
Yeah. So my youngest is five, so she's graduating from my lap soon.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't want to sit on my lap, which is quite sad. And especially she's the only girl that I have. The other two are boys. So as they grew up, they grew a bit smellier, I would say.
So you were happy to let them leave the lap.
But the little girl is more endearing.
Okay.
I know it sounds very biased. I love reading my Dr. Seuss book to them. Because the kids love it. The rhythm and all, the kids love it because they can follow what's going on.
Second one,
I think I am passionate. I think across many things that I do, I would always want to do things with passion, whether it's teaching, whether it's even in my banking career, I focus on projects that I am very driven to deliver. Right.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example. If you have taken a public transport now in Singapore, if you are using a credit card, that was my project in 2019.
Oh, so you just tapped to get on? That was
the credit card. So the Visa and MasterCard being used, right?
Right.
So you carry your credit card, you go to Osaka, now you can take a public transport. That's the type of project I do. Sydney, Hong Kong, which went live only last year. Korea. If you go Korea, you take the Airport Express bus. That's the type of project that I have.
So you're a bit of the tap and go guy.
You're right. Last one, I will say firm. Right.
Okay.
I think through what I do, I tend to be very resolute on what is fairness, what is justice, what is balance, right? May the 4th is coming. I love Star Wars. I love the idea and concept of balance.
Okay.
I think balance is needed to maintain system and to ensure that there's continuity and sustainability on all things we do. Yeah. So three.
Okay. Yeah. You have spoken quite a bit about your family and how growing up you had a bit of a tough childhood as well. I believe both your parents were unwell. You know, your mom had cancer, your dad had kidney failure. How do you think that has sort of shaped you to what you are today? What lessons did you learn from that experience?
Safety nets need to be there. A very wise friend shared this with me. He calls it the seasons of life, right? When you are born, you are growing up as a student, you find a love, you get married, you become a father, you see your children grow up, you fall sick, etc. So these are seasons of life. But what happens is the seasons of life interact with each other between two people, three people, different generation. Yourself, your father, and maybe your child, right? Your father, mother, your older generation may fall sick ahead of time. Then when it interacts and you're stuck in between, or if you're young. So in my case, I was very young when it hit me, right? So how do I handle? I couldn't. I was thankful I had an older sister who had actually tanked most of it, right? So we made it through somehow.
Right.
And that shaped me to think of a few things. One, what type of social support, or is there any social safety net that can be that can come in to actually support this, that can actually help you as a family, right? So, and what more can we do to make it easier, right, for caregivers? So my mom had throat cancer, but she's a huge fighter. She fought cancer for 20 years, right? But every time she fought, she won. The quality of life just dropped. So every step until the last 5 years of her life, she was on a drip. She couldn't eat. She was on the milk nutrition pack, right? Couldn't swallow. Choking all the way, and somebody had to take care of her, right? And then I formed the view that one, somebody has to give up their job to do it, and it was so hard because somebody has to earn the money, somebody has to bring the money back, and that kind of shaped me to say that, is there any way the government can actually step in to help out? And it's not just money, right?
It
shouldn't just be money. It's about policies on allowing sabbaticals, allowing leave, allowing you the opportunity to just put up your hand and say, can I just take a day off? I need to do this for my mom. Or can I just take this month off, or can I have flexibility to do this at home, right? And all this have to be part and parcel of what the government should come in and do.
Right.
And that's not all. I think when especially in Singapore, where we have the FSC, we have the supporting groups, right? How do we actually align it to actually support it? So this has kind of shaped my thinking around what needs to be done, right? From a family basis.
So in a way, you felt that from your experience, there were a few portions, perhaps gaps in the system.
Correct. Gaps, and on top of that, I think opportunities for us to do more, right?
Okay.
And it could be a slant away from how we've been looking at things, because to be honest, the government is an effective machine, right? Mm. So from a machine basis, they are looking at how to actually make sure that we are competitive in the economic space. How do we ensure that MNCs, when they come in, when they hire, we don't impact the way we operate too much. Now, trade-off again, right? What I want to look at, if I were actually having the ability to look at this, is what are the trade-offs? For example, for me, right, my biggest regret, and I shared this as well, was that I don't spend enough time with my dying parents on the last few months of their last few years. And it's a regret that you will never be able to remove, right? Because once it's passed, right?
That's right.
You live with it for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So my thinking is always, we should be able to give Singaporeans the ability to say, put out their hands here. Can I just take a bit of time off? Can I just do this?
And
rotate me back, right? Have a revolving door policy or sorts or programs that actually allow them to come back in. Maybe not the same job, but the ability to come back into working force.
So in a way, we've had a lot of focus on the economic side of things, but perhaps you're saying time to focus a bit more on the softer side, the human side, you know, where we worry about our families and our loved ones. Would you say then that these changes in the season have prompted you to then step up and say, well, I want to be here now. In this season, I want to be here to take part, to speak out, to be a voice.
Very nice way to put it, actually. To be honest, I think I'm at the wrong season.
Oh, okay.
But I have 3 young kids, right?
Mm.
So my biggest fear has always been my job, my ability to still provide for them. I have a good job. I work for a good company. I enjoy my job. Company allow me the opportunity to step up and go back in if after the GE is over.
Okay.
Now, I have carried that burden of providing for the family as a major main breadwinner. Am I in the right season? I don't think so. I would have loved it if, let's say, my kids were a bit older. My kids are 11, 8, and 5, so very young, right? If maybe 5, 10 years later, it's actually a better time. So when the leadership, I was Dennis, MP for Outcomes, LA, assistant, right? So he asked me a couple of times, and then I told him, I don't think so. It's the wrong timing, right? I just want to help. And I was his assistant, so I was running his tour buses, his events, and basically taking care of some of the aspects of town council as well. And after, I think it's the wrong time, right? It's a wrong time for me to do this. Yeah, then he asked a couple of times. We have a very close mentorship relationship, right? Because we see each other at least 4 or 5 times a week,
right?
Sometimes I see him more than my wife.
Okay.
Yeah. One day, Mr. Lau asked me to pass him some stuff. So I took and went down to his house and he said, come in, have a chat. I don't know whether it was planned, to be honest, but he spent 3 hours with me chatting about this. And Mr. Lau has always been an inspiration to me, right? Again, maybe because we are both ex-teachers, we connected quite well.
Mm.
And he shared on why he actually stepped out as a politician as well, what he wants to do, and the fact that he is wishing that people in the party continue his legacy, right? So to me, the concept of legacy is very important. To me, this GE campaign, the overriding thought on my head has been passing on the legacy, making sure that we are able to pass on the legacy to the next generation.
Okay.
So to me, I felt that I carry a certain, I wouldn't say it's a big torch, but a certain flame from Mr. Lau to carry on certain aspect of what he believed in a balanced political system, right?
So it was a sense of responsibility.
To a certain extent, yes.
To carry on his legacy.
Yeah, I told him I'm actually living my life for my 3 kids, right? And that's very upfront. It's what I do now is actually for my 3 kids. And he said, why don't you step up, do a bit more, and it's that generation of the children that you have instead of just your 3 kids, right? Because of the impact that you bring, right? He knew that I'm still very passionate about education, how I see our education system needing to evolve to actually provide for the next.
Let's talk about that a little bit because, Dr. Ong Yu Ping was here and then he also was talking about education, especially the PSLE, the four-letter word that scares so many parents, you know? And as a teacher as well, what is your take on our education system?
Well, I taught in a primary school. So when I was teaching, I wasn't a parent yet. So I only saw it from one side, right? I only saw it from a teacher side. And now that I'm a parent, to be honest, I think things become a bit more concrete. I am of the view that PSLE needs to be reviewed.
Okay.
Right. Make a guess. When was the first time a Singaporean actually sat for PSLE?
Oh, I have no idea.
1960.
Wow, okay.
65 years.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
If you look at this, 65 years, of course, the mode, the format have changed over the years. We actually updated it according to our syllabus needs, right? But the purpose of it, is it still relevant? Mm. Is it still doing what it's supposed to do? Yes, it is. Right. It is actually allowing us to actually place students into
a different
school.
Yeah, it's a tool to measure the ability of the child at that time.
So
right?
Then you place. Correct. But now, if you look at our education system, do we want to go down that route? Should we go down that route?
Okay.
Is it still valid for all children? So my thinking as a teacher and as a parent now is we have to approach this from a multi-pathway approach, right? Mm. We have done that with the upper section. We have done that. Your IB program, your true train for that
right. Sex.
Now, in many countries, they have actually approached this from a year 1 to year 10 as well. That means a primary 1 sec 4 equivalent. And it works. But qualify that a bit, it doesn't work for everybody. There are still kids that do very well with PSLE, right? Could we have, right, certain schools could be those IJ schools or those similar to SGI, De La Salle School, where they have both primary and secondary together and have the same pathway, right?
Okay.
And then actually provide for that as one slice of the education system, followed by those who want to do PSLE and those through DSA.
The system has evolved a little bit. It's slowly changing. It's just that it will take time. And even if you had these ideas, it's not so easy to change the system because parents get used to it. They want to know how to game the system, so to speak.
Right? Correct. So the gaming one is always a problem, right? I think parents are actually sometimes the cause of the problem, right? And I somewhat agree with you because I am that type of parent as well. Right, and I always try to hold myself do the right thing.
You're going to take leave when PSLE comes?
I don't know. I think I will.
Okay.
But I think when I started my campaign, I shared one of the things that that influenced me. And this was from Prof. Teo Yu Yen's book, This is What Inequality Look Like. And the title is, I Want My Children Better Than Me. And that phrase will always stick in, I would say, 90% of parents' head.
Right, of course.
Right. So, if you know you spend extra 1 week with your child and his results can be 5 points better, will you do it?
Yeah.
You would.
You would.
You would.
Unless you cause so much stress that it becomes 5 points less.
I think that would be a very different story, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think if you have that understanding that is the overriding principle for most parents when it comes to your child's development, then is there any way for us to build a structure around it where it's less stressful to kids, less stressful to parents? I think there is. It's just that it takes a bit of structural change or policy change, right? The True Train program could be that way for certain people, right? But not all, right? Like I say, for example, I have 3 kids, right? My first boy is a very exam smart boy. You throw him a paper, he'll do it, and he'll do quite pretty decent, right? But not my second boy.
So would you say then, in the sense, this system, the level of equity is missing a bit? That it's not fair for all. Some kids will obviously do better, but in any system, some kids will do better than others, right?
Agree. And I think that's where from a structural, from a support basis, that means what teachers do, right? Teachers want to teach, to be honest. It needs a bit of tweaking. Equality versus equity, right? Equality, everybody comes in, everybody on the same starting line. Equity is making sure that everybody have the right tools, right resources to actually reach a certain set of outcomes, right? It's pushing everybody together to move up. Now, with the different pathways, the equity would be different as well.
Yeah.
Right. And this is where the role of the teacher becomes very important. Right. The teacher would be key as a touch point to ensure mm-hmm. that the child develops. And we are not looking at it from a knowledge transfer perspective. Right. I give you an example. Right now, class size for upper primary class is about 38 to 40.
Okay.
Right. It is the most effective way to transfer knowledge. It's like a factory.
Right.
And I think you have children, you will know.
Yeah.
Right? Now, when I was teaching a gifted ed program, we have class sizes of 25.
Mm.
Right. Now, the contact time I have with the kids is massive. Okay. Right. And for a teacher perspective also, you are able to actually use the brain space of lesser students to handle, lesser marking to handle, to actually think about how you develop each child. And that becomes very crucial if you want a multi-pathway approach.
Right.
Right. So if you ask me if I were to implement this, what's the first thing that we need? Drop the class sizes. Have more personalized approach with each child.
So that we're not just transferring knowledge, but we're actually building up and helping individuals develop.
That's right. That's right.
And I think, yeah, many teachers have often said that they just don't have the time for that
because
the class sizes are too big. Do you think this mentality, this mindset as a teacher, you know, as a mentor in that sense, is this something you want to bring to the table? What is your USP to the Workers' Party, if you were asked?
Well, to be honest, when I asked to run, my USP is the fact that I was the assistant to the MPs, right?
Okay.
Yeah, because when you're assistant to one of the MPs, you basically run the grassroots, you know how the town council runs. So my take, maybe you have to ask the leadership on this. I feel my take then was the fact that I was having the experience of running Hougang together with Dennis.
Oh, so you were like the operations guy. You knew everything that was happening. Right, right. It just made sense to
get you there. Yeah, if it's a fire, I'll be down there. If something happened, you know, I'll be down there. Town council call, I'll go down. I stay at Hougang, right? I'll run down in my shorts and everything.
Okay.
So it's quite ugly. But that happens.
It's good to have someone who understands and knows how things are working.
Correct.
But beyond that, what would you say you as an individual, if you are telling your voters now, you know?
Well, I think beyond that, the ability to run, the ward and division, like you say, I bring to the table, the education experience, right?
Okay.
I'm very, very close to education still because a lot of my peers, my batchmates are still teaching and most of them have gone up to be HODs and VPs and stuff like that. And I'm still very close in touch here because we are very passionate about education as a whole. That's one. And I think it's time that we review how our education structure and policies are in Singapore with a fresh lens, right? Is our education future ready? To be honest, I don't think so. Mm. It's still stuck in the mode of knowledge transfer, which doesn't help with a future ready state, right? So that's one. Two, interestingly, I've been in banking and finance for the past 14 years.
Yeah.
It seems like a long time. Yeah. I think I bring with me the private entity experience as well on why competition is important. And part of my job was actually dealing with governments all across Asia Pacific, right? Convincing Department of Transport to actually accept credit cards and debit cards to open up. And I think I bring with that as well. In the course of my work over the past 8 years on this transit payment space, I dealt with public transport quite a fair bit.
Okay.
I love public transport, by the way.
Okay.
I think I bring two big aspects that Singapore, I feel, need to relook at. Public transport to a certain level, payments definitely. But the education piece, which I personally feel is very close to my heart.
Okay.
Right. And I feel that I can really contribute from a educator's lens, a parent's lens, right? Mm. And lastly, from a Workers' Party's lens. Yeah.
So you're now on the East Coast GRC slate. Yep. I mean, we know in the last election that was a pretty tough fight.
Yeah.
The day is coming very soon. How do you feel about it?
I think it's really up to the voters. The voters have been very nice. The support we got, the residents coming to us, taking photos, speaking to us, you know, just wanting to chat with us to show their support, right? I think I felt a bit overwhelmed.
Okay.
I'm a resident of Hougang. They are used to seeing Workers' Party. So they know I help out with Daniel. So when I go to market in my shorts, they know who I am as well. I felt a bit of that at East Coast.
Okay.
Yeah. So to be honest, I wasn't expecting it, but getting the warm welcome from them, and we posted on Facebook, we'll be down. People actually travel down to Simpang Bedok to catch us. Yeah. To catch us, to just say hi, to say that we support you.
Okay.
I really love it. I think it's very heartening. To translate to votes or not, I don't know. I don't have the experience yet, to be honest. So I don't have the ability to tell you whether are we there yet? Have we crossed the line? But for us, or at least personally, I always see this as a journey, right? Chinese call it 耕耘. That means we do what we need to actually farm, to actually move forward. Workers' Party have been in East Coast for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. We have not stopped, right? Every single week, our volunteers goes down to actually speak to residents, to actually get feedback, to introduce. This is the fifth election we are running in East Coast GRC. Right. If it's not this time, I don't know when, our work to engage will always continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you get voted in, you will have a voice in Parliament. You will be talking a lot about education, I imagine.
Yes.
If not, will you still continue in this pathway?
I will definitely continue to help out with Workers' Party. Okay. Right. Whether to be on the slate for the next GE, I think it's really up to the party. As you can tell, the number of candidates that are coming up are very interesting, right?
Mm.
Whether my background, my abilities will be suitable for the next slate, I think is something up for talk by the leadership.
Okay.
Right now, I'm just very honored and pleased that they feel that I'm a right candidate to put on this slate. Because we have amazing candidates this time,
right?
And with many of them, I kind of form a comradeship of sorts, right?
Okay.
Because most of us, our backgrounds are going through certain things that actually make us believe that we want some form of change in Singapore. Yeah.
All right, Jasper, thanks so much for coming in and speaking with us.
Mm.
To all of you who are joining us, thanks so much. This has been Deep Dive. Of course, you know we are edging ever closer to polling day, so stay tuned. We'll have live coverage of the results show. I'll be hosting that as well, so we'll see things happen as they roll out. But otherwise, we hope you've enjoyed our coverage of all the new faces we've had here on Deep Dive, and you'll keep joining us even after the elections. A shout out to my team, Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Saya Win, Crispina Robert, Alison Jenner, and Ely Mansour. Till next time, see ya.